So my presentation is about cover crops in the context of climate change. So we have this big, long title, Why Do We Care About This Question? And this is a nice, diverse group, session about climate change. I just came from the cover crop session, so I thought I might start with talking about what is a cover crop. So a cover crop is what you see on the left-hand side of this picture. It is a plant that's grown when the soil would otherwise be bare to protect it. And cover crops are not a new practice. They've been around for centuries or longer. They've gained a lot of excitement over the last, short amount of time in high-producing agricultural regions like where we are, where this study is discussing in the upper Midwest, to reduce soil erosion, improve water quality, reducing pollution coming from fields. And the plant that you see here on the left-hand side of the screen is cereal rye. It's about it's a grass species. It's about as cold tolerant as they come, which again is important for where we are in the world. So that's what a cover crop is. And then why does this matter? So why did we even ask these questions about cover crops in the context of climate change? So I want to show you this image. It's a picture that I took from a rest stop. It's in southwest Iowa. It's on I-80, about 50 miles west of Des Moines. And it happens to be a little tribute to Henry Wallace, who was Secretary of Agriculture, Vice President of the U.S., and he's from that part of Iowa. And what the dark slabs in the middle of the pillars are meant to represent is the depth of topsoil and how it's changed throughout the last 150 or so years in the state of Iowa. And so what this shows me is that we have gone from this period at 1850 when more than just Native Americans came to live and farm in the state, with 14 inches of that very rich prairie-derived mollisol soil. It's such a rich resource that we have in this area. So 14 inches in 1850 to about 5.5 inches today. And so I understand that the complexities of the transformations that are happening on the landscape are far more complex than what this monument depicts. But what this shows to me is that this has happened over a period of time when we've had a relatively stable climate. And we know that that's not going to be the case moving forward. So really that was the rationale of this project, that we know that into the future we're going to have more increased demands put on our environment. So if someone was to build another pillar for 2050 at the end of this, what would that look like? How much topsoil will we have in the future? So trying to understand these questions and predict them into the future, what will the state of our resources be? Because we know that we can't ignore the importance of our soil resources moving forward. So that was the motivation of the work, and when we started this project, we didn't feel that there was a modeling study that could really well answer producer questions about long-term cover crop impacts related to yield, related to different environmental benefits such as erosion prevented, carbon accumulated, and there's been a lot of great modeling work done for cover crops and water quality, but we knew that there were more producer questions out there about the impacts long-term of using a cover crop. And also the questions about how does that change into the future with future climate change. And these are all things that we couldn't easily test out in the field, and a model is a really good candidate for us to attempt to answer some of these questions. And the tool that we worked with for this study was APSIM. It's a cropping systems platform that was developed by CSIRO in Australia in the 1990s. And since that time, it's been widely used and tested all over the world, and it's got a very complex soil module. It's got a lot of different crop modules that you can use. It also allows for a nice flexible management of crops and planting dates, etc. So it was a really nice flexible tool for us to be able to answer some of these questions about different crop rotations into the future. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about the field data that we used to test our model. So this is all information for a long-term research site that's in central Iowa. It's in Boone County. It's been managed by USDA scientists since 1999. There's 24 experimental plots that you can see in the picture. So there's some different tillage treatments, some different nitrogen rate treatments. But for the purposes of this modeling experiment, we focused on just two of those treatments, and that was the no-till corn-soybean rotation and the no-till corn-soybean rotation with a cover crop included every year. We did that for two reasons. One is that those treatments have been in place on the site since the beginning of the experiment, so again, a really nice long-term record for us to look at cover crop impacts and to test the model with, and also because we really just wanted to isolate the effect of the cover crop. And so for this presentation, since it's short, I'm not going to present any of our model testing and validation data. Our publication will be online probably next week, so you'll have to trust me that the model did a really nice job, and I'll direct you to that, because that's not as exciting. Like the application stuff, what did we see for the future? I think for a short presentation, that's more exciting. So I want to start by talking about the model application with the two different weather scenarios that we worked with. So what you see on the left are the downscaled output of 20 different global climate models for our location in central Iowa. And you can see on the left-hand, or on the right-hand side, excuse me, the abbreviations for some of those models from the CMIP-5 project. And then on the right, we also worked with five different scenarios that were based on current record just randomly generated. So we were able to compare by using these two sets of data what would happen if the future looked like the past, or what would happen if the future looks like we might understand it to, given the greenhouse gas forcing that we know is happening. And so for the purposes of this experiment, since we can't work with everything, and I had to graduate at some point, right, we just worked with the output of 20 different global climate models for representative carbon pathway 4.5. And so this is just a quick snapshot from the fifth IPCC assessment. So RCP 4.5 on the right-hand side is one of the lesser emission scenarios. It's representing an increase in global temperatures of 1.8 degrees Celsius at the end of the century. And so I just want to show the weather scenarios that we worked with in this way, because it'll make more sense when you look at my next several graphs. And I also want to note that all of these individual dots represent 1 year prediction for this location from one of the models or weather scenarios. Okay, so what did we find? What did we find in the impact of a cover crop on crop production and in the context of climate change? So my first graph, we'll start with corn yields, right? Everyone's favorite question, what's going to happen with corn yields in the future? And so what we found that they're given climate change, so what you see on the left, the global climate model scenarios predict a decrease in corn yield 7% over the simulation period. So we ran the simulation from 2015 to 2060, or an average decrease of 1.5% by decade. And so you see that declining trend in the global climate model scenarios that we don't see if the future looked like the past on the right. And that seems to be a result of the increasing temperature trend, driving more temperature and water stress, leading to crop yield declines. And then the other important thing I want to note here is that these black dots represent both the cover crop and no cover crop simulation. So for this graph, I didn't separate the impact of the treatments because we actually didn't see a significant effect, which was a little bit different than we might expect, because farmers do report that over a longer period of time of using cover crops, they see yield increases, but we didn't see that in the model. So here we're seeing a decrease in corn yields over the simulation period driven by climate change, and no significant effect either increasing or decreasing corn yields. And I won't show you a graph for soybeans because it was pretty much the same story with those two points in terms of the declining trend and no difference between the treatments. And then moving on to environmental impacts. So this is a graph of soil carbon, and here I do have this separated by treatments because we did see a significant difference between the two. So green being the cover crop treatment, the brown being the no cover crop. And so what you see here is that the model is predicting actually a decrease in soil carbon over the period of our simulation in both treatments and in both weather scenarios. And this is interesting if we think back to that first set of slides that I showed in those pictures that, you know, we seem to associate a lot of conservation practices as increasing soil carbon relative to current conditions, but that's not what we found in our study. And the biggest decrease is coming in the global climate model scenarios, which seem to be driven by an increase in soil temperatures driving faster rates of decomposition, but also, as I just showed, that declining yield trend having less carbon input into the system. Whereas, on a more positive note, that the cover crop is able to significantly offset that decline. So moving on to what we found for soil erosion. So what you see here is just a calculation that we did between the two simulations, so the percent improvement in erosion, so the additional erosion that was prevented by the cover crop, and it was a range here from 11 to 29%, where there was more erosion prevented into the future in those global climate model scenarios versus, again, if the future looked like the past. So gives us more confidence to say that some of those weather scenarios that we were working with are representative of those processes that we are already seeing on the landscape, and we know will continue to happen, and more rainfall variability driving more soil erosion, but a greater percentage reduced with the cover crop. And then finally, my last graph is the change in nitrous oxide emissions with the cover crop that we found with the model predictions. And what we saw was, across both weather scenarios, a pretty consistent reduction in N2O with the cover crop, where that reduction was on the greater end in the climate model scenarios. And what's interesting and neat about working with a tool like this is that you can tease out and say, okay, of the factors that we know that lead to N2O loss, like inorganic soil nitrogen, reactive carbon, soil water, we can see what is the cover crop impacting. And it looks like, in terms of the predictions, that the model is consistently predicting a reduction in soil nitrogen, and that seems to be why it's predicting a difference in N2O loss. And we understand that in the field, N2O is far more variable and complicated than this, but it's neat to look at this as a study and see, under maybe idealized settings, how the model behaves. And finally, wrapping up, so what we saw in terms of crop production impacts, that the model did not predict a difference in corn and soybean yields with the long-term use of the cover crop, which again was maybe not what we might have expected to find, but we did see differences in some of the mechanisms, like I just talked about, in soil nitrogen and things like this. So we saw that it was having an effect, but not a great enough effect to impact the final predictions for yield. And again, that climate change is driving decreases over the period of our simulation in both corn and soybeans. And the soil carbon trend, right, is not necessarily the direction that we would hope to be going in, but that the cover crop is able to offset that declining trend. Some of the numbers there are more positive notes about erosion prevented and nitrous oxide reduced with the cover crop. And then the final take-home message here, that we do see, using the model and the best available tool that we have to answer questions like this, that the cover crop is able to offset some but not all of the negative effects that we might expect from climate change. So, you know, this one practice may not be a panacea for all of the future change that we might experience. Okay, with that, I'll close and open it up if anyone has questions. Thanks. Go ahead.
So, were you able to explore any of the variability in terms of, you didn't see any change in yields or anything like that, but did you look at variability in yields with the model, or variability in the decrease of carbon or whatever?
So, variability in time or in the treatments, or did the cover crop reduce yield variability? I want to say maybe not, because the differences were so minor. And like I said, when the paper is out, we have a small section, actually, which is kind of interesting, about the difference between the wet and dry years. So we separated the future predictions into wet and dry years, and we did actually see some of the very dry years that the cover crop had a less positive effect on yield, which was interesting to us. It's not necessarily what we see in the field. It's what some people hypothesize might happen, but I actually saw those water impacts later in the season. It wasn't like May and April, May. It was later on. So I don't think it did reduce yield variability. That was one of our research questions. But, yeah, wish that it was, but it's not what it was. Go ahead.
In your models, you showed yield decline for both corn and soybean. Were you able to factor in genetic improvements or management improvements?
That's a great question. So the question was about, did we include any genetic improvements? Are you a plant breeder or a geneticist? Or okay. So I've presented this to plant breeders before, and they just seem horrified when I give them the answer to this question, and we didn't, right? Because in any modeling experiment, we can't factor in every scenario. And I know that there is a lot of good modeling work that's thinking about, you know, if we increased, you know, the ability to withstand drought and we changed a few parameters in the model, would that improve it? And here we, for the scope of the study, really wanted to look at the impact of the cover crop. So, but of course it's safe to say that we won't be using this exact same cultivar in 2015 as in 2060, but yeah, we don't know necessarily how that will change. So that's a good question, but hopefully a sufficient enough answer.
With temperature increases with maize and Midwest, some of the yield decline comes from a growing season. And did you adjust the planting of the cover crop, you know, as the growing season decreased, to get some more of a cover crop growth period?
Did we adjust for more cover crop growing?
We saw a decrease in the growing season of corn. I guess that's the first question. Was there, did the growing season of corn decrease, and then that extra time, could that be devoted to more cover crops?
That's a good question, and I guess, yeah, in terms of the limitations of this study, we didn't change planting dates, and I didn't look at, I did some analysis of what's happening with those future weather files, right? They're from Global Climate Models, too, and I don't know that I can answer that those are predicting changes in the growing season, but I don't show the graph here. It is in our paper that we did actually see, even with a very narrow planting window, which we didn't change. It was October 20th for corn years and October 1st for soybean years, an increase over the study period in cover crop growth. So some indication that really temperature is driving that change in the reduced corn yields and the increased cover crop biomass. So that's a good question, too.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.